I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to a bonus edition of the Curzon Film Podcast, coming to you from the south of France. We're wearing 50 protection sun cream, not for the sun, but just to handle the scorching takes coming out of Cannes. I'm Jake Cunningham and I'm joined by our man in Cannes, Damos Manley.
Great to be here, Jake.
Now, for those listeners who are new to the show, Damo's been on a number of times because he's our head of programming. We've brought him back from Berlin, from London, from Toronto, and I'll be chatting to him for a few short episodes about some of the highlights from the Croisette. But first, let's talk about what you're actually doing here, Damo, because as I understand it, it's just a two-week holiday.
Yeah, that's it really, just hanging around, drinking cocktails and it's no one ever believes us, but it's really, really hard work at a festival. I mean, we watch 5 or 6 movies a day, which people say, well, that's not really work, but obviously there's admin and reports and, and meetings and business and networking and everything else. And it's usually a sort of fairly, sleep-deprived, adrenaline-filled, week or so. Where we're just trying to consume as much as we can. And of course, we are distributors as well. So we have a team who are also out here scouring the market and having meetings of upcoming.
Yeah, so for listeners who really may not know at all what a programmer would do from even before Cannes or any of this happens, from a day-to-day, how would you describe what it is you're doing and how then coming to a festival like that, this will influence that?
Well, myself and our programming team are responsible for all of the movies and events that play in the cinemas and also into Curzon On Demand, our streaming platform in the home. And that means that we are constantly abreast, or we try our very best to be constantly up to date with all of the movies that are coming out. And we're making curatorial choices about what plays in the cinemas, which also means a lot of negotiation, scheduling, and deal making. And being here is a time where we can see all of the films that are coming. It's future. It's a future research project. Mm. All of the films that are going to be coming out over the next 6 to 12 months, and we can see them early. We can start to plan ahead, and even start to sort of have some of those early conversations about getting some of these movies in to Curzon cinemas.
Yeah, and I think it even goes beyond that. I'm thinking of in a couple of weeks we'll have episodes on Jean Pham and Armand Duble. I'm sorry for that pronunciation, Francois.
it's close enough.
but those are films that played last year, and they're not hitting us for 13 months.
Yeah, that's right. Most of the films we're watching here are getting their very first premiere, and internationally, and many of them have been rushed through and completed for this festival. So what happens after that, of course, is that the business and commercial side of those releases has to take place. Mm-hmm. The films are then sold to international territories, which the UK and Ireland are one, of course. And then that distributor has to plan ahead, work its UK premiere. So a lot of the films here will premiere in London at the London Film Festival in October. And then, of course, after that, look for the right moment, the right date for the film to be released, and yes, that can take over a year.
Yeah. So let's talk about the first film that was announced for this year's festival, which was Everybody Knows, which Everybody Knows has not had the best reception.
No, it hasn't. I mean, I sent a tweet the other day to defend it a little bit. It's been getting sort of 3-star reviews, which of course, you know, is fine. You know, 3 stars means it's a good movie. But because it's an Asghar Farhadi movie, the bar is set very high, very high expectations.
Yeah, so this is director. Yeah, the guy that most recently made The Salesman, that's Oscar winner for a language film.
Peter Bradshaw gave it a 4-star review, but he's a little bit of a lone wolf at this week, and the buzz has been a little bit negative on the film. But I think it's a grower, and it might not be one of his strongest films in terms of some of the, you know, really groundbreaking movies he's made in the past, but it's a really good watch.
Yeah. And do you think maybe it struggles from the pressure of being, you've got opening night at Cannes, you're always going to have all the eyes on you, and so if you slip up at anything, people are really going to jump on it as well?
Absolutely. I mean, Ishmael's Ghost last year was a very good example of that, of a film that was, you know, people do queue up. There's a sort of weird stigma about being, there's a lot of pressure on that opening movie. And I think it's probably a little harsh to say that's the reason, but I think really that there's just a huge amount of expectation around him as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And so he's judged in a slightly more critical way. Yeah. For that reason. But it's a really good film. I mean, he's put together what I could only describe as a sort of Avengers team of Spanish-speaking actors, you know, Penelope Cruz, Javier Bardem, and Ricardo Darín. And it's my ropey pronunciation, Durán. Anyway, just pick one of those. And, you know, the biggest Spanish-speaking stars in the world. Mm. And the film starts out as small town family drama. It's set around a wedding and Penelope Cruz's prodigal daughter returning from Argentina with her family. I don't want to give too much away, but a kidnap takes place, and because the family are fearful of going to the police, they try and sort of handle it internally. And what happens is that through this difficult time, cracks start to appear in the relationships in the family and their close friends, and old scores start to come to the fore. And the film does something very clever with this idea of a victim, which I would certainly spoil the film if I talked any more about it. But it's a little, it plays a little bit like a sort of really good Ruth Rendell mystery, to be honest. Yeah, in a sense. And great performances, as you would expect, and it's beautifully made and crafted. I just think that it just doesn't hit some of the heights, and that it perhaps follows a slightly more familiar route than some of his other movies, and consequently he's gone into a little bit of rough water for that reason. Yeah.
And do we know when we're going to be expecting to see that in cinemas yet? Or,
well, there's been a deal. It was one of the first big deals of the market that was announced, and Focus Features have picked it up for, I'm not sure if it's the world, but certainly for several territories, including the UK. Mm. And they normally go out through Universal Pictures, so I'd expect that they'll be looking for a date probably early next year, I would imagine, but I'm just speculating.
Okay. And so Asghar Farhadi's well known in these parts. He's played the festival a number of times. But let's move to maybe a directing team that still new, with a pitch called Birds of Passage, which I think you're very excited about. I think a lot of people are excited about this one because of a little film called Embrace of the Serpent.
Yeah, Embrace the Serpent came from sort of nowhere. It was released in the UK in 2016. I remember it was Curzon Bloomsbury's top film of that year, and we had a very high market share on that movie. Our Curzon members really responded well to it. And I mean, this was actually co-directed, this film, but it's Ciro Guerra who directed Embrace of the Serpent. It's his follow-up. He's directing with Cristina Gallego. All probably very ropey pronunciations, but
I think we can accept that this whole episode.
Write it off.
Yeah,
it's really going to take people a little bit by surprise. It has a sort of tribal theme, and it's set I think the action starts in 1968 and it's set in the Colombian desert. And I mean, literally, you know, sand as far as you can see. And it's the, it starts off as a sort of investigation into the sort of the clans that live in this area and their very strange customs and superstitions and rituals. One of the opening scene is a young woman being released from this hut where she's been held in captivity pretty much for a year. And the tradition is that once she has this year of confinement, she becomes a woman. And then she is presented to the men, this, you know, very patriarchal. Well, I say that actually, but the strongest woman in, the strongest person in the tribe is this woman who has vision. And he's given this huge dowry. If he wants to marry this young girl, he has to come up with so many goats and so many, you know, and he has nothing. So he sat with his friend trying to figure out, you know, how can I find this dowry? And they come up with this idea of selling some weed to these American hippies who just happen to be passing through. And basically that moment in the film is the birth of the Colombian drug trade.
Right.
So it takes this really unexpected direction from being this sort of very...
Or it sounds very Embrace of the Serpent-y stuff.
Very Embrace of the Serpent, going straight off to sort of Escobar style, but all within these strange rules and rituals of the clans. So yeah, it's a really unusual one. Probably not for everyone. It has this, you know, because it has this shift in it, but certainly one of the most talked about films on the Quasette.
I'm just going to take this opportunity to highlight something from the short films program, which listeners might not know that my work outside of Curzon involves a lot of short films. There is a particular one that's played this year called Our Song to War, which had massive Embrace the Serpent vibes, that kind of upriver journey, but with a reversed colonialist angle of that. We're so used to it being that Conrad feeling of it. We're focused on the person on the river who's journeying upwards, and you're looking at kind of Lost City of Zed and Apocalypse Now and those characters, and this is looking at the people who are on the other end of that journey and the people that are in the forest or in the desert.
And that sounds really interesting. Japón by Carlos Regalas is another great example of one of those. We let you do other things.
When you let me out of the podcast booth, I just run away and watch short films. And then, it's just because I don't get much time out, so I have to do shorts, and then just so I can fit in a little.
That makes sense. Yeah. I like that logical approach.
Right, and so the last one that we'll highlight in this little episode, I think, has got to be Pavel Pavlikovsky's Cold War, which I've just seen today, but you've had a little bit of time to linger on as well. This is the follow-up to Ida, which was winner of the London Film Festival Best Film. I think it was Oscar winner for foreign language, is that right?
I think it was, yeah. I think it was, yeah. And it was a Curzon release.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of.
I really love that film. I remember that year it was a tough one in the end, trying to decide what was my film of the year, with two quite different pictures between Ida and The Raid 2. Which, if you ever did a double bill, I don't think would quite work. But maybe as a programmer, you'd be able to figure out the right event of how we could put together Ida and The Raid 2.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I have to switch the audience halfway through. I remember Ida in particular because, you know, we always remember movies that we love, and we remember particular special feelings while watching those films. I mean, I have a terrible memory, but I always remember the cinema that I watched every film in. And I do remember with Ida, I watched it in the market in the Berlin Film Festival, where basically, you know, you have people on their phones and you have people walking in and walking out. And it was absolutely packed. Nobody took their phone out. Nobody got left. And it got a round of applause at the end, which was just probably the only time in my career that that's happened. So it was such a powerful impact on a bunch of sort of world-weary, hardened professionals. This is Pawlikowski returning to that space. You know, it's shot in just insanely beautiful black and white photography, as Ida was. And the Cold War that's referenced in the title is actually between two people, although it played out in that period. I think it's the late 40s when the film opens.
I think it starts in 49.
Yeah. And I mean, the opening of the film is just terrific. It's about a group that are a little bit like you, actually, Jake, with this recording equipment. They're traveling around the local countryside.
I do like to think of myself as a member of the Polish mountain folk community.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd like to think that I'm better looking than some of the people that he photographed, but I certainly don't have their talent. And he's, recorded. And they're recording and basically putting together a troupe of traditional singers, dancers, and musicians in order to travel the country and sort of celebrate, you know, Polishness and, of course,
traditional folk music.
Yeah, traditional folk music and also the influence from Moscow, of course. And in this moment, one of the musicians who's running the program falls in love with a young singer, and the film follows their tempestuous relationship over a number of decades.
Yeah, it is a stunningly beautiful film. The music's fantastic as well. I think there's a really lovely jazz scene in Ida, and I think maybe he fell in love with that as much as audiences did, and wanted to take that opportunity to delve into how you could use this monochromatic, fluid, lovely camera within a more musical setting. So well choreographed, but never feels super staged, even though some of the images in it feel like paintings and that you could just sit and stare at for ages. They don't feel overly composed at the same time. It's still got a natural feeling to it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the acting is traditional. The acting is terrific. I mean, in particular, Joanna Kulig, who's the young girl, is very hypnotic performance from her. And using a lot of non-professional actors to sort of create atmosphere and authenticity. And the reaction from the screening, its premiere last night, has just been phenomenal. And I've made the joke today, and I'm going to make it now, that it may well be in pole position for the Palme d'Or.
That's good.
Thank you very much. I'm here all week.
Yeah, I bumped into someone yesterday who had put bets on this and the Spike Lee.
Really?
So that's now in my head as what the competition is.
That's very good. And five-star review in The Guardian, which is a great start for us, in terms of our us growing an audience for the film.
Yeah, this has come out of the blocks a bit faster than Ida, and it makes me think that hopefully people will go back and find that film as well that maybe haven't seen it already.
I do hope so.
Right, so that's maybe the coverage of films that we've seen already. What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, there's a few things that are coming up that I'm quite excited about. There's a new Lars von Trier, the house that Jack built, which has Matthew Modine in a role that I think is going to surprise a few people. I read somewhere that they're not allowing von Trier in front of a microphone, but I'm not sure if that's true.
A sensible move.
The director of It Follows,
David Robert Mitchell is
here with his next film, Under the Silver Lake, which has a really fun trailer, if anyone wants to check that out online. Also, Dogman has caught my eye as well, from the Gomorrah director.
Oh, Mattia Garrone.
He's
going like dipping back into his old classics, because he went and did Tale of Tales, which is very different after Gomorrah type of stuff.
Odd move for him. Sort of strange, surreal period fantasy movie. No, but this is very much back where perhaps he belongs. Mm. And of what I've seen of the film so far, it's shot in a seaside housing estate that makes the Gomorrah locations look a bit like here and the French Riviera. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Brilliant. So head over to the Curzon blog for more updates from the Curzon team throughout Cannes, as well as Damo's contributions to that. If you haven't already, dip back into the latest episodes of the podcast. We've just released an episode with Ian McKellen, which is about McKellen playing the part, a new documentary about the great man, which is going to be live in cinemas on the 27th. And also go back and check out our recent episode on Lean on Pete, which features Charlie Plummer, as well as our episode on Beast featuring Michael Pierce. If you've got any thoughts on the Cannes films or the film festival as a whole, do feel free to email us at podcast@curzon.com. And I think that's probably going to be it for a few days. We'll catch up on Monday and maybe have a chat about what we've seen over the weekend. I'm looking forward to watching the latest Godard. And I'm sure you and I are very much looking forward to waking up at 7:30 on Sunday for a delightful Gaspar Noé climax.
Absolutely. I mean, that time in the morning, it's a bit like drinking a bottle of bourbon or something. He's always a treat.
Yeah. Damo, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.